Welcome to this introduction to Around the World in 80 Days, one of the New Vic's biggest and best-loved productions. I'm Mim Bernard, and together with Brenda Hennessy, we'll be audio describing the show on Saturday, June the 13th at 2:15 p.m. The Touch Tour will begin at 1:15 and we'll meet you in the foyer in front of box office a few minutes beforehand. Running time for the show is about 2 hours and 10 minutes, including a 20-minute interval. Adapted by Laura Eason and directed by Teresa Heskins, this revival of Jules Verne's famous story is part of the theatre's 40th anniversary celebrations. Having reunited the creative team, as well as members of the original cast, it promises to be every bit as action-packed as the 2013 production. Between them, the cast take on 109 characters, 6 trains, 5 boats, 2 dances, 1 storm, a circus act, and an elephant. We first meet our protagonist, Phileas Fogg, at the top of the show, as he goes about his regimented and repetitive daily routine. A little later, and in a moment of seeming madness, he accepts a bet from one of his associates at London's Reform Club, who challenges him to circumnavigate the world in 80 days. Accompanied by his newly engaged valet, Passepartout, and travelling by any means necessary, their journey takes them from the alleyways of Victorian London across Europe, Asia, and America. On the way, they save an Indian princess from certain death, battle marauding bandits, and try to outfox the shifty Inspector Fix. Marvel at the sleight of hand as actors seemingly throw banknotes and passports to one another across the space, and delight in the physical comedy, circus skills, slow motion sequences, and distance fights as you join us for this race against the clock. Before I describe the set, I'll tell you first about the auditorium, in case you haven't visited this theatre before. The auditorium. The New Vic is a theatre in the round, with tiered, upholstered purple seats surrounding a 10-metre diameter circular stage. The stage floor accommodates a number of concealed openings, called traps, through which actors, props and scenery can be brought on and off stage. 3 evenly spaced tunnel-like entrances lead up onto the stage. 2 entrances are used by actors and audiences, and the third, slightly larger main entrance, is used only by actors. Thinking of a clock face, if the main entrance is at 12 o'clock, the other two are at 4 and 8 o'clock. During the audio description, we'll name the 4 o'clock entrance the right entrance, and the 8 o'clock entrance the left entrance. By the main entrance at 1 o'clock, and by the left entrance at 9 o'clock, there are 2 sections of acting space we call notches. Behind the audience seating, at the back, is a circular pathway known as the promenade. From it, 5 sets of aisle steps lead down to the stage. In the aisles, at the end of each row of seats, there are small handrails to assist ascent and descent. The aisles and promenade are used by both audience and actors. Above the promenade, a balcony houses 2 rows of seats and is edged with a safety barrier. Fixed high above the stage is a large lighting rig, complete with walkways known as the grid. Props, other equipment, and elements of the set may be stowed or suspended from here. Now for the set itself. How do you design a set which takes the characters and audience from the Reform Club in London to Calais, Brindisi, Suez, Bombay, Calcutta, Hong Kong, Yokohama, San Francisco, the plains of the American West, New York, Liverpool, and back again? It's a challenge, to say the least. Liz Evans's minimal but period design takes full advantage of the theatre's in-the-round setting, transporting us around the world with little more than a floor map, an assortment of trunks and suitcases, and some tables and chairs. The first thing we encounter as we enter the auditorium is a huge world map printed on the floor, with the countries of the then British Empire shown in faded red. Scattered around the edges of the map are assorted tickets, labels, and travel documents. We also follow this remarkable journey by means of 3 other maps which hang on the walls of the auditorium, behind the back row of seats. The smallest one, above and behind the 1 o'clock notch, is an enlarged street map of the area around Phileas Fogg's house in Savile Row. Two much larger maps are sections from a chart of the world published in 1863, showing the era's significant communication and transport networks. One covers the first part of the journey across Europe and Asia to Yokohama in Japan. It stretches from the aisle steps at 9 o'clock to the steps at 11 o'clock. The other continues the journey across the Pacific Ocean, North America, and the Atlantic. It hangs from the aisle steps at 3 o'clock, round to the right entrance at 4 o'clock. The route lights up in blue and yellow as the journey progresses, while Inspector Fix marks each location they reach with magnets in the shape of top hats. Both notches house collections of well-travelled suitcases and trunks. In the 9 o'clock notch, a fake staircase has been constructed of suitcases, the curved handles of three furled black umbrellas providing a makeshift handrail. Two large oblong trunks, one in a beige linen weave, one sandy-coloured, are wheeled in and out from under the stairs. These are each 110 centimetres wide by 50 centimetres deep and 60 centimetres high. They are strong enough to be sat or stood on by the actors. Two similar-sized trunks, one pale blue, the other brown, are located at the front of the 1 o'clock notch. Perched on the pile of suitcases stacked up behind them is Fogg's bright red Bradshaw's Continental Railway Guide. Together, the four large trunks, along with four other sturdy brown trunks and smaller suitcases, become, variously, train carriages, boat decks, consul's desks, the elephant's wooden seat, and even a sledge. A small, square, white, slatted tippy table, two matching folding chairs, and four white boat rail panels are used for scenes on the decks of steamers. Meanwhile, in the Reform Club, three mahogany high back chairs are set centre stage round a card table. A drinks trolley, disguised as a globe, and a fourth chair are in front of the right entrance. Then, towards the end of the story, two balloon-backed chairs and a small round table define Fogg's drawing room. Listen out, too, for a whole host of other props, some of which are used in visual improvisations, while others help illustrate the different locations on the journey. For example, at the start of the opening scene, when Phileas Fogg is in bed, he stands in front of the main entrance, while two other actors hold bed covers under his chin and a pillow behind his head. After he wakes up and stretches, he is served tea and toast from a silver tray before continuing on with his daily routine. Another visual improvisation involves two actors creating the elephant's head from Fogg's grey overcoat. The sides are rolled together and secured with a rubber money band to make the trunk. This is held and operated by an actor standing on the floor. His face is hidden within the folds of the coat, while above him, Miss Singh stands on the elephant's seat, holding an open cape-like sleeve in each hand to form the flapping ears. A third actor, sitting at the rear and facing backwards, lowers his head and sways, a long plait on the top of his hat suggesting the tail. In other scenes, Passepartout's bed linen is a French tricolour flag with a pillow affixed at one end. Brightly coloured woven sari baskets and gaudy trinkets announce that we are in an Indian bazaar, while the flower boats on the Canton River in Hong Kong are conveyed by actors holding traditional Chinese sedge hats containing orchids and other tropical flowers. In addition, many of the boat crossings begin with a model ship held aloft by the purser or captain as he or she crosses the stage. And on several occasions, Inspector Fix takes to hiding behind newspapers, usually with prominent headlines about Fogg's journey. Listen out too for the circus props, red streamers, a trampette, wooden hoops and strongman weights. Not forgetting Passepartout's ukulele, with which he serenades the audience at the start of the second half. As with all new Vic productions, lighting, sound effects and music are also key. A temple on Malabar Hill in Bombay is evoked by a circular mandala pattern projected onto the floor, while the whole stage is bathed in red light during a scene set in an opium den. Birdsong pervades many other scenes, from the night owl we hear early on to seabirds and tropical birds. The chimes of Big Ben, steam engine whistles, gunshots, the soundscapes of different cities and thunder and lightning, along with the music that interacts with and drives the journey, all contribute to the immersive atmosphere. However, it's worth mentioning that there are some extremely loud sequences where the combination of sound effects and music might make it difficult to hear our audio description. As ever, though, we will try our best. And, just so you know, we'll also call Passepartout Pass in the audio description, as his name is often too long to fit into the gaps between the dialogue. I'll now hand over to Brenda to tell you about the characters and costumes.
During this whirlwind performance, a multitude of characters are played by just 8 actors. I shall describe in detail the 4 main characters we meet on the journey, followed by briefer descriptions of many of the other characters, most of which are played by our 4 ensemble actors. Phileas Fogg is a middle-aged man of medium build, tall, handsome, calm and unresponsive to what might normally excite interest or emotion. In his daily life, he's perfectly well-balanced and as exactly regulated as clockwork. He stands upright in a formal manner, his neat graying blonde hair parted on his left, brushes his collar. He has side whiskers, a trim beard and moustache. When we first meet Fogg, he wears a dark checked waistcoat over a white stiff-collared shirt with an old gold cravat secured with a pin, black trousers and black shoes. A gold watch and chain adorn his waistcoat. Later, he wears a calf-length frock coat with velvet trim and black top hat. He carries a neatly furled black umbrella. On his travels, he takes his overcoat. It's grey with a large, faint check pattern. This overcoat has long open sleeves that drape his shoulders and arms, like a cloak. This style is called an Inverness. The Inverness proves to be very versatile. The Bradshaw guide, it's the size of a house brick and almost as heavy, is usually stowed in his well-worn Gladstone bag. Phileas Fogg is played by Andrew Pollard. Jean Passepartout is Phileas Fogg's valet. He's a true Parisian and former circus performer. He's playful and honest, with an adventurous nature he's trying to squash. His movements are urgent, excited and energetic. He's in his late 40s, about 5'5" tall and of slim build. He has short, thinning brown hair, a faint beard and moustache. He wears a brown bowler hat, occasionally pulled on so tightly it bends his ears to comic effect, a cream shirt and brown bow tie, a pale sepia matte print waistcoat, camel-coloured trousers with a faint check, a short mid-brown jacket piped with dark brown and tan shoes. A silver watch and chain decorate his waistcoat. He carries a small, well-worn suitcase adorned with travel stickers and a light brown umbrella. Passepartout is played by Michael Hugo. Inspector Fix is an over-eager policeman from Scotland Yard. He's in his 40s, tall and slim with greying, once dark, slicked back hair, receding at the temples. His face often tense and strained as greying stubble and a moustache that accentuates a scowl. He wears a black bowler hat, a white shirt with restricting starched collar and a black and white finely spotted tie, a black and white check lapelled waistcoat, charcoal grey trousers and a black jacket with tails and black boots. Inspector Fix is played by Dennis Herdman. Kamala Auda is the well-educated daughter of a wealthy Bombay merchant. She's a self-possessed, beautiful young widow. She's of medium height and build. When we first meet her, her long black hair can be glimpsed beneath the long white scarf. Later, her hair revealed is worn plaited, and a bright orange flower decorates her hair. Auda's first outfit is of traditional Indian style. A long white scarf that covers her hair drapes around her neck and shoulders over her long-sleeved white tunic camise that falls below the knee, all worn on top of a white shirt and grey trousers. She wears light brown flat shoes. Later, she wears a Victorian-style dress of cream silk patterned with sprigs of pale flowers. The white shirt beneath now sports a gold ribbon around the collar, fixed with a ceramic flower brooch. Victorian dress, has a close-fitting bodice, sleeves to the elbow finished with two rows of flounces. The bustle skirt finishes above the ankles. There's no attempt to hide the grey trousers underneath. Audit is played by Purvi Palmer. The four ensemble actors are Pushpinder Charney, playing 30 characters, Thomas Cotran, playing 28 characters, Elliot Parchment Morrison, playing 30 characters, and Chiara Nicole Pillai, playing 27 characters. Each wear a base period costume comprising a white shirt, a neatly tied pale sink bow tie, a waistcoat with a very apt aquamarine map print design, grey trousers and black shoes. As many quick character changes are made, costumes are worn on top of the base clothes or added to with accessories such as epaulettes, cuffs or hats. At the beginning of the performance, we meet James, the rather short-lived valet of Phileas Fogg. He wears the base period costume with a dark waistcoat. Out on the streets of London, we meet a street sweeper. He wears a drab loose-fitting coat and bowler hat. A beggar woman cradling a child. She wears a ragged pale skirt and shawl. And a flower seller carrying a basket of flowers. She wears an apron over a long grey pinafore dress and a bowler hat trimmed with flowers. At the Reform Club, we encounter Flanagan, Ralph and Stuart, three rich and highly respectable members who partner Phileas Fogg at whist, a card game. Each wears a dark frock coat on top of the base clothes. As we travel with Fogg, we visit many countries and meet local people wearing clothes appropriate for their country, culture or occupation. Blackberries are worn by French rail passengers and straw boaters with eel tricolour, green, white and red ribbons for Italian rail passengers. On the steamboat Mongolia, Fogg meets Mr. Nardu, a jovial Indian fellow. He's not as tall as Passepartout, and he's of slim build. His graying, thick, wavy hair brushes his collar. He wears a Nehru-style mustard-coloured coat that falls to just below the knee. Women passengers on board wear period-style matte-print apron dresses with a bustle. A purser or steward wears a white peaked sailor's cap and add white cuffs to his wrists. In India, we meet Bombay bazaar sellers in bright tunics. At the temple on Malabar Hill, Passepartout meets three angry guards. They wear knee-length coats tied with a sash and turbans. A monumental guard wears an orange and blue silk coat with exaggerated shoulders and a giant turban. We meet a policeman wearing a cream silk collar, tunic and turban. In each country, Fogg's passport is stamped by a consul who wears a pith helmet and gold-fringed epaulettes. Riding an elephant, we meet Miss Singh. She wears a green matte print design coat and a purple and turquoise headscarf. In a courtroom scene, Judge Obadiah and his clerk, Mr. Oysterpuff, wear black silk legal gowns, wire-rimmed spectacles and appropriate wigs. In an opium den, Hanfu's Chinese-style flared jackets and sedge conical hats are worn. At the beginning of Act Two, we meet a troupe of circus performers, all expert at acrobats. They wear pale green, white and red striped Victorian-style bathing costumes. Butulka, the ringmaster, is distinguished by his bright red tailed jacket, red socks and red top hat. He carries a stick and wears supple black boots. The female of the troupe has a tutu-style peplum of rainbow-coloured net sewn onto her costume. Red silk stars are applied to each costume. Later we meet Colonel Proctor, a well-dressed American. He wears a brown 10-gallon hat, a checked neckerchief, a long tan dust coat caped at the shoulders, and hidden beneath is a holster and gun. He has a habit of spitting. There's a train guard in uniform, a navy peaked cap with a ticket machine and ticket punch dangling from crossed leather braces. We encounter a herd of buffalo, well, three, distinguished by their fine crescent-shaped horns, well, rolls of sacking held high. There are two masked bandits astride invisible galloping horses. They wear cowboy hats and tote guns. One has a rope secured at his waist. Inspector Fix introduces a sledge owner called Mudge. He wears a beige full-length hide coat with a fur shoulder mantle and fur hat, David Crockett style. He dons goggles when steering the sledge. Captain Speedy, owner of the Henrietta, wears a short navy loose jacket and white peaked naval cap. His crew wear navy blue sailor smocks and fisherman's caps. At times, the four ensemble actors make quick changes on stage, perhaps by pulling a length of fabric from a basket to fashion an outfit, or maybe just removing a hat or coat. Other characters will be mentioned during the audio-described performance. That concludes the introduction, but please listen on for the credits. Around the World in 80 Days is adapted by Laura Eason and directed by Teresa Heskins. The composer is James Atherton, the designer Liz Evans, the movement director and choreographer Beverly Norris Edmonds, the lighting designer Alexandra Stafford, the sound designer Alex Day, the casting associate Angie Carroll, the vocal coach Caroline Hetherington, production management by the Nuvik team. Around the World in 80 Days is directed by Teresa Heskins. Bon voyage!